You're listening to the What's the Truth podcast with me, Jessica Hoddle. I'm a number one bestselling author, wife, and coach. I refuse to let you keep believing the lies that are coming at you from every direction. Every week, I'll speak truth, bring encouragement, and inspire you as I uncover the lies you may believe to be true about your life. Each episode is meant to challenge the way you think to change the way you live. Hey, welcome back, or if this is your first time, I'm so glad that you're here. Thanks for listening to What's the Truth? I'm Jessica Hoddle, your host, and today we're going to be listening to part two. So if you haven't listened to part one, go back, listen to part one, but we're continuing this conversation with my spiritual father, PJ McClure. Again, we go deep into healing and processing emotions and this idea of I'll never get through this, which is a lie, because you will and you've overcame so much already. So be encouraged. But again, if you haven't listened to part one, go back and I will link it in the show notes below for you as well. But let's go ahead right into part two. You know, in a sense of I would do anything to kind of shrink back, but now my husband has to rein me in because he's like, Jess, you were too bold there. Like in a sense of being almost people can take me wrong because I can be assertive and borderline aggressive sometimes versus where I used to be, which would be, oh, let's just be together, referring to a relationship because I don't want to break up with you and make you sad.
Right.
You know, like
we covered one of those as well.
I think, and do you remember too, when I was thinking about do you remember the rehab and I would email you like every day when I dated the sociopath? You were really upset about that one.
Yes. That was one of them that I feel like I needed to be like next door.
Yeah. That one put me through some hard rehab. And I say rehab, it was like emails every day.
It really was. And I think that's also a turning point in you having to face what being worthy of love meant. Mm-hmm. That was a huge piece because, I mean, there were a couple of guys in there that, you know, minor dating wasn't, you know, hey, I'm going to go out with this guy, see what he's about, that sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, so what do you know about him? You know, and would go into the dad role. Yeah. Spiritual father be damned. I wanted to know what this guy was about.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you know, I don't really know. And why are you going out with him? And how long did we fight about this? Because it really was a fight. It was a fight.
And then even with the purity aspect, I was getting to the point where I was afraid to tell you who I was dating. Because, you know, it's like that dad role of like, oh, I don't want to tell him I'm dating somebody because he's going to question me and he's probably not going to like me.
Yeah.
And I think that was huge, you know, and I remember multiple times, you know, my mom, my dad was a big one. Can you think of any other ones that were the moments of, I'm never going to get through this?
And I think let's just stick with the, if we'll come off of that, because you had your mom, your dad, you had some aunt, uncle issues. There were some cousin interactions in there. Some of them healthy, some of them not, but they all got lumped together because they were all family.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was, you had a very difficult time separating how do I interact with this person this way, but still maintain this completely different relationship with another person in my family, quote unquote. And so that puts you in a position of, I mean, that there were always, without bringing up any names, there were always times of, oh, no, we're good. And then maybe the next week or 2 weeks later, oh, my gosh, I don't know if I'm ever going to be around him again. And then it would swing back the other way. And it took a little while to realize that, and part of your compromise and the realization for me was how hard you were compromising certain things about yourself because you had identified who you wanted to be. And we were identifying that person was totally available to you to be that person. It was just a matter of shifts and some decisions, but you were willing to compromise who it was you wanted to be for the sake of not putting pressure on somebody else to take their part of the responsibility in your relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You were willing to allow them to continue to run their path, even though it was damaging to themselves and as well, it was definitely hurtful to you. It took a long time to be able to go ahead and to address that place of confrontation, to address that place of, you know, I can't allow you to keep doing this in this relationship with me because it really hurts me. Mm-hmm. And to be able to stand for yourself in that regard, not even in a way that you're putting your dukes up and you're ready to fight, but just in a way where you're putting a gentle open hand up to say, you've got to be over here if you're going to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we even defined a lot of different definitions or defined a lot of different roles that people could have in our lives. Mm-hmm. Everybody doesn't have to get, and everybody shouldn't get, frankly, the same level of access.
Yeah.
I'm big into metaphor, but another huge one was talking about the fence. Mm-hmm. You know, who do we allow inside the fence? You know, the fence is there. Some people can come up to the fence and we can interact with them there, but they don't get inside. Other people know where the gate is and they can come over there. And if I give them permission, they can come inside. And a very few number of people just have open rein to come in and out.
Yeah.
Because once they're inside that boundary, it's not about, in some ways it's about keeping people at a certain distance, but more than that, it was about you learning that you could establish a boundary on your own.
Which was huge, I think.
And that was okay.
Yeah.
Not only was it okay, but it was the only healthy way you were going to be able to interact with everybody, because, you know, one of the things that if we wanted to define it by, I'm never going to get past this, being able to understand that not only can you, but we all have to, and I'm going to come back to this, treat people differently. Mm-hmm. Because we've been told in so many different pseudoscience kind of ways, well, you shouldn't treat people differently. Ah, crap. Mm-hmm. Total bunk. You have to treat people differently because not everybody gets the same level of access. Mm-hmm. You just simply can't live that way. If everybody has all this access to you, where is there any left for you?
Yeah. Well, and I think I
left for people that may, you know, that are closer.
When it even comes to boundaries, I think even now there are some people where I could stand my ground easily, but what would it do? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think that's where it comes with wisdom. Then is I'm really, you know, John's always like, Josh, you should apologize. You know, you're a little too strict. But then there's other times where I let things go to an extent of maturity level of each of us, of I know where they are. So me just saying all the things I feel, would this benefit? And am I okay without addressing anything? You know, and I think that just has been something too that was huge for me, you know, because before I would just whatever happened would happen and I would you know, I would just let it go. Damn the torpedoes,
here comes Jessica. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think now, like I said, it's like that to me, because when you grow up in that abusive home, you never have a voice. And I think I came out of the womb literally in fight or flight. And I think I stayed there for pretty much all throughout my entire life, even to my late 20s, even into early relationship with John, I was still in fight or flight. And I think that is one of the reasons why after we got married, I kind of got sick there for a while in a sense, because my body was no longer in fight or flight. And it was like, you're safe now. And so it could like relax. And I think that everything just like,
came. It was almost a vacuum at first.
Yeah.
To where there was such a dramatic change, such a dramatic environment change that anything that was in flux got sucked into it, you know, and you had to go through this period of sorting it back out.
Yeah.
And knowing all of the deliberate steps we took through your guys' dating process.
Yeah.
And I say we, because I was intricately involved.
I think I wrote it in A Worthy Wife. Like, you had to approve of John. John had talked to you.
Yeah. And I mean, he and I took weeks on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just talking on the phone. But I mean, we did a lot of work up to that point. The thing that I think about is what happens when people don't do that work going into that. How huge of an impact would that have been had you not done any work? Had you not known, okay, here are things about me that are probably going to happen. Mm. I mean, that you can understand why a lot of marriages fall apart, because there's no work going into it. And it's not a fault on anybody so much as it is just a commentary on where we are societally, that we just don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what might happen. We don't understand what the basis of the relationship is. So many relationships are started off physically, and we equate that willingness, which that's a whole other conversation, but we equate that physical willingness with love and worth.
Mm-hmm. Which I did many times.
Well, and I mean, welcome to the billion people club. You know, that's the way most of our society shapes things. And so whenever you get into a relationship and all of a sudden there's a whole lot more time available than what you can have sex with, then, wow, there's this other stuff we have to do as a couple. There are these other things we have to concern ourselves with. There's this other stuff that actually makes the relationship matter, that, I mean, we could nerd out and go back to the neuroscience level on that too. Yeah. But I mean, God designed us specifically for a process. And when we circumvent that process and try to do it in a different way than what it's prescribed, and yeah, it's old fashioned, but that's okay. Our bodies, our minds, our systems aren't designed to respond to it as well like that. You know, just the whole conversation of the levels of dopamine, the feel-good chemical in the female system. Those intimate physical relationships release copious amounts of that chemical into the female system. That chemical is specifically designed, we can follow it through the mind and the body, to create bonding between people. It's a bonding mechanism.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it's prescribed that we wait until the level of commitment is made before engaging in those activities. Because the more often, and this is going to sound so sticklerish, and I'm okay with that, the reason that we should avoid premarital sex is not really about all the published reasons out there in the world. You know, yes, there's issues of disease. Yes, there's issues of, pregnancy out of wedlock and fatherlessness, and all of these other, all those things are there. But the bottom line is, the more often we engage in physical intimacy outside of a committed relationship, you know, whether it's pseudo committed or whatever it is, the more often that happens, it's like taking two pieces of tape, or taking a piece of tape and sticking it on your arm, right? It sticks pretty good that first time, but when you pull it off, what comes with it? The residue of the arm that it was on. And then turn around and try to stick it on another arm. It doesn't work as well. Do it again. It doesn't work as well. And we've got a society that treats those relationships so casually that people lose their ability to bond.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when something doesn't quite go right, or maybe I'm not, again, doing air quotes, in love with somebody anymore, come on.
Yeah.
That's weak.
We don't know how to communicate.
And it's because we've set ourselves up for it.
Yeah. We don't know how to talk to each other, because everything has always been solved with, here's my body. Well, that was at least my thing. Oh, there's tension. There's tension. How can I deal with this?
Well, he's usually happy when we do this. Hi, let's do this.
Yeah. And I think that was, I remember, it was the last person I dated before I met John, and he was a school teacher. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, I remember.
He was a school teacher, and he had broke up with me over the phone. And I remember being at my cousin's, one of my cousin's house, and you were like, I am turning off my phone. Stop texting me. I'm going to bed. You need to do the same. Like, you were just like, there was no, but you knew that I didn't care. Like, I wasn't mad at you for that though either. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, it was more that you just need to shut it down. Stop texting me. Go to bed. I'm turning my phone off so that I don't get your bazillion text messages.
Yeah.
'Cause that was my emotional response. Like, I needed somebody to like puke it on so that I didn't puke it and make a bad decision.
Yeah.
You know, and I
and think there's also, you have to remember though, that was also coming off of, and I don't remember the exact time frame, but another dating scenario that was.
That was the same year as a sociopath.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to come a time, and this goes back to what I said about spiritual fatherhood. The primary role in that is speaking truth into somebody's life when nobody else will do it, especially. Sometimes, the most of the time, that truth needs to be spoken with gentleness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it needs to be spoken with a firm smack to the cheek that says, hey, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to what you're saying. Listen to what you're doing. Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. You're getting ready. You're trying to spiral.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ridiculous. Quit it.
Mm-hmm.
Rest yourself. We'll come back to it later. And I don't know, that probably took me 2 hours to even say that to you. That
I think so. Night. I think so.
Because,
yeah.
You know, I thought, okay, well, she's going to get it out. And then you didn't get it out and it wasn't done and it wasn't done. And yeah. Okay, you're saying the same things over again now. So it's time
to stop. I still do that. John's like, you've already said that. He's like, do you know that you repeat it? And I said, I repeat it because it helps me get it out. If I repeat it 10 times and you let me repeat it 10 times, I tend to, that's like my way of processing and I tend to be okay. And like,
well, but that's part of what we worked on in the whole premarital thing for you guys too.
Yeah.
Is the fact that he can say that to you.
Yeah.
He can say, okay, you know that this is the 10th time I've heard this, right?
Yeah.
But there are also times when, and it's not always easy, but you either need to be able to say, I've got to get this out. I just need you to listen.
Yep.
Because his instant mode, as you know, is I need to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? So if he knows, one, I don't have to fix it, because two, you don't have to say it once if you want me to fix it. But now that we're on the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th time, you know, you're bugging the crap out of me because I know you don't want it fixed.
Yeah.
And so just having that relationship to be able to say, I need you to listen. Okay. Or to be able to say, wait, do you need me to listen or do you want me to act?
Mm-hmm.
I need you to listen. Okay, yeah. Cool. Because then he can kind of let it wash over him, you know, when it starts repeating and it's not as big a deal anymore.
Well, we still do that, yeah. And I think that, you know, we weren't talking for a few years just out of whatever that was. And I think that it was... I think there's a healthy where you can tell, I tell John everything, but there are some things that I need to process, not with him, you right. know, and, or not even with a girlfriend of just, you know, you were always that person for me. I'm just like, and then when we started texting and I texted you, like, I was like bawling. 'Cause you were like, you call me like daughter again. It's like those words mean so much to me. And I think that, like I said, I don't know if I would be here where I am or even just regaining my purity in a sense of committing to that. Like, I don't think I would be where I am. And God knew that, you know, like,
right.
And I'm forever grateful for you for that. And I think to kind of, you know, wrap this up a little bit is what, knowing what I've gone through, I know obviously a lot of people that listen have dealt with it, even to maybe degrees they didn't know that I was dealing with it. What would you tell them now that you told me back then, as far as I'll never get through this or the emotions that I felt, what can we kind of leave them with?
I think, you know me, that I want to be as practical as possible because I want somebody to have something that they can enact and use. And so this may seem super simple to somebody sitting there, oh, that's a lot of alliteration. How many S's did I have in a row right there? Anyway,
alliteration.
It's I do too. It's great stuff. But the biggest challenge that most people deal with that prevents them from moving into a deeper sense of themselves, a deeper spirituality, is overwhelm. Mm. They live in an almost constant state of overwhelm. And the only time they're not overwhelmed is when they're in denial. So there's never a healthy spot for them to be able to sit and consider themselves. And that sounds weird, but that's the whole metacognition thing. That's the thing that primarily separates humans from, you know, everything else, is that we can think about ourselves. And that's that spiritual aspect that's so important. But if you're, one, uncomfortable with your own thoughts, two, completely overwhelmed, or three, in denial so that you don't have to deal with either, you have to be able to learn how to face overwhelm and dismantle it. And so the biggest key, and you'll remember some of these phrases, overwhelm is not one thing. Overwhelm is a collection of many things that we've allowed to get so tight and so nondescript that it feels like one big thing. And so a few steps that we need to take is to, one, first understand that. It's a lot of different things. And the first way we can do that is by getting a piece of paper and a pen, you're opening up a document on your computer, whatever it is, and just sit and brain dump and call every single one of those things by name. I'm battling this, and this is bothering me, and this is bothering me, and this is bothering me. And before long, what felt like a big, huge boulder of overwhelm will start to dissipate, and you'll have a list of, I mean, I've seen everywhere from five things that felt like they were a million to somebody that literally at the end of a weekend working together, they had over 1,100 things on a piece of paper that they identified individually as things they were dealing with that were scaring them, bothering them, causing them anxiety, whatever it was. And you can imagine they looked at that even, they're like, oh crap, this is a binder full of stuff. I'm like, okay, give me the first page. And we tore off the first page. I put the other page away. I folded it over like six times. And there were, I think, like four items that were still visible. I said, pick one of those. They picked one of them, and I handed them a fresh sheet of paper. I said, all right, write it at the top. They did. Now, how would you attack that thing?
Yeah.
That's it. Just the one thing. Well, I would do this. And we did that four or five more times. They got the picture. You know, oh, I get it. We do with one thing at a time. And they went away, and within a week, they had dealt with all 1,100 plus things on that list. Because of what they found was they dealt with one, and several of the others disappeared.
Yeah.
And just continuing on like that. So to come back around to the original question, what would I leave you with? Learn how to attack overwhelm. And I say attack because it needs to be an offensive measure. You go to it, look at it in the face and go, okay, what all are you made of? And list those things out, because until we get past overwhelm, we're not going to be willing to consider ourselves in a serious way, because all of those things are in the way. And so once we can kind of dismantle that and settle the waters, then we can start to consider who I am. What do I want to become? We can get into the whole mindset thing of what is my vision? What is my purpose? You know, all of those things that I talked about, and flip the switch and put all of those together. It's very difficult to enter into that kind of work in a meaningful way if you're still battling with anxiety derived from being overwhelmed or complete avoidance.
That's good. I still do that today. I journal so much. I think I actually did it this morning. I was feeling some feels and I just started working through them as much as I could to go, right. why do I feel this way? Oh, it's because of this. So this is linked to this. And I just start like drawing arrows, yeah, or whatever. And that's just been probably my training, you know, ever since forever. Probably, I mean, since we started working together, you know, just really getting heavy into journaling. And I still have all the journals from even when we had our calls, because I would write, you know, right, you would tell me and I would just write it, which another is like good for your brain of just that that connection of writing what I was hearing and, you know, writing that out. I mean, even between the business we were in from the notes of that, the calls that you used to do there, I saw that then into our personal calls. And I think that, I think it's just fun to first have you on the podcast, and to do this with you. So thank you for just hanging out with us and revealing some deeper truths. Cause I think, you know, social media and you can only be so real. And then when somebody else comes
it's
on,
true. Everybody complains about people having, a social media life, that polished, sanitized life. But the bottom line is every time anybody starts to reveal the real stuff going on, nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah.
The only reason people want to hear how real life can be is if they need to feel better about who they are. Mm-hmm. And so they go looking, they go trolling for who's doing really bad. Mm-hmm. And, if I can give them some nameless, faceless sympathy on social media, then I feel like I've done something there.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, it's part of our new reality. It's part of our new normal that you're not going to know everything.
Yeah.
But I think that makes community even more important.
Yeah. And I think it was fun to hear your side too. I don't know if we've, it's been a couple years since we've talked. And so coming on the other side, I feel like a different person. And when we were even texting, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, yeah, like I can understand that. And it's like a different level of handling when you're giving me, even just recently I was dealing with something, I can't remember what it was actually. And you're like, well, remember this. And I loved your example of the tree with the branches.
Right.
And
whenever the wind blows through.
Yeah. And so just want to say thank you. We're probably going to put this into a two-part so that people can listen to it in little pieces. So thanks for hanging out with me.
You are amazing, my lady. I am so glad to get to do it. Love you to pieces.
P.S. One more thing. If you've ever felt like you weren't good enough, smart enough, pretty enough, thin enough, strong enough, worthy enough, or doing enough, then my best-selling book, Know Your Worth, is for you. If you knew what you were worth, would you settle for anything less? It's not uncommon to feel inadequate, whether it's issues surrounding your career, your body, relationships, or your finances. You will discover gems to apply in your own life as I take you through my own journey of how I was able to overcome the unthinkable by realizing my worth wasn't tied in the things or people, but to God. In this book, I really walk you through the how-to of stop settling for relationships that do nothing but cause you pain. Find the tools you need to be successful in life. Realize you are beautiful just the way you are. Refuse to settle for anything less than what's God's best for your life. And recognize that no matter what your past looks like, it doesn't have to be your future.